Okay, so far what we've done is we've defined what we mean by a queue, which is a collection of jobs, a collection of servers, and a description of how jobs and servers behave and how jobs are allocated to servers. Okay, so that's just the primarily notation. We've noted that the probabilistic nature enters into the arrival process for jobs. We can't predict in general exactly when they're going to arrive. And the service process, the service time, we can't predict for certain how long it'll take to serve the jobs. We then looked at Little's Law, which related the average number of jobs in the system to the average service time of the jobs in the n equals lambda t relationship, and proved that and looked at how we might use that. We then said that really, and what was interesting about Little's Law is that it works for any arrival discipline or service discipline. We then said that in order to go any further with analysis of queues, we had to make some assumptions, and the main assumptions are on the arrival process, so the inter-arrival times of jobs, and we said that they had to be governed by the jobs had to follow a Poisson arrival process. Okay, and we looked at a lot of the properties for Poisson arrivals, and we said that there's some idea that they represent a sort of maximally random set of arrivals, and that this could actually arise from lots of users sending jobs into the system. Okay, so we now want to see what else if we assume our Poisson arrival process, we want to see what else we can derive about the system. And the first thing that occurs is looking at either the average number of jobs in the system or the average time spent by the job. So Little's Law related the two, but it didn't tell you how to calculate one or the other. So if you could observe one or the other, then you could calculate the other one, but in the absence of one or the other, you were stuck. Okay, and so what we're going to take a look at is finding the average number of jobs in the system. We're going to do this for an MG1Q, so we assume our Poisson arrival process, but then we say the service discipline can be general. We are going to need to know something about the service discipline. I think it was several slides back, but we're going to need to know not just the average service time, but also something about the variance, or what we'll see is it's actually in terms of the second moment of the service time, but that's a statistic, that's a quantity related to the variance on the service time. So we need to know a little bit more about the distribution in order to arrive at any results. Okay, so as we said, our Poisson process is maximally random. The number of messages in any processing time is independent of that for any other processing time. It's dependent only on the actual length of the processing time, which again is a random length. Okay. The average number of arrivals per processing of any job is fixed and is given by a bar. Okay, and that's sort of what we saw before. And so we also just saw that the utilization, the amount of time that the system is busy, the average amount of time is also equal to A bar. And so from our previous analysis of traffic loading, we saw that the average, the number in the system was again related to our arrivals by this equation. And what we know is that if we take, what we're looking for is the average of N, but if we just take the expectation of this equation, then we know that we're just going to zero everything out. So we have to be a little more clever about trying to figure out our N bar. Now, as is often the case, when taking an expectation zeroes everything out, what you want to look at then is the square, and take the expectation on the square and see if the quantity you want falls out of that. Okay, so we can square both sides of the equation, and we get quite a lot of terms, but we know a fair amount about each of these terms, and we'll try and sort of get them into a format that is useful. So we squared both sides and taken the expectation. Again, this isn't steady state, so all of the statistics about the state are equal, so the expectation of ni plus 1 squared is the same as the expectation of ni, so we'll cancel out those terms. U of ni squared is just equal to u of ni, and therefore the expectation is just rho, as we've calculated before. Ni u of ni is equal to ni, and so again, when we take the expectation of that term, we just get the expectation of ni. A and u of ni are independent, so we can take the expectations separately, and when we do that, we get rho for each term, so we get 2 rho squared. And similarly for a and ni, so when we take the expectations, we'll get rho and ni, and the expectation of ni. So we can plug that all in, and we get an equation in terms of what we're looking for, which is the expectation of ni, which, again, in steady state is just our quantity, n, and then the expectation of a squared. Okay, so if we can solve for the expectation of a squared, then we can find our value n, and plug in for our value n. Okay. So the expectation of a squared is the expected value of a squared over all y. And so what we need to do is take the conditional expectation, and then if you take the expectation of a conditional expectation, you pop out your original quantity. Okay, so what happens when we fix y? Well, when we fix y, a is Poisson, and so for fixed y, we know what the expectation and the variance of the Poisson are. Y, again, is playing the role of t. Y is the length of the service period. Okay, so the expectation of A given Y is lambda Y, and indeed the variance of A given Y is lambda Y. Okay. Now, the variance is defined, it's the expectation of the variable squared minus the expectation squared of the variable. Okay, so popping that into what we have, we get the expectation of a squared plus a squared given y is the variance of a given y plus the expectation of a given y squared. We know these two quantities, so we get that it's the lambda y plus lambda y squared. Okay, now, as we said, to get rid of the conditionality, we take the expectation according to the conditional variable. So we're now taking the expectation with respect of this quantity with respect to y. So that's the expectation of lambda y plus lambda y squared. Okay. And so we each quantity, we can deal with each quantity separately. And we have the expectation of lambda y, and we will and then the expectation lambda y squared is in terms of our variance plus the expectation squared of the quantity. Okay, so expectation of lambda y, so y is our service time, so the expectation of y is 1 over mu. So expectation lambda y is is lambda over mu, which we know is rho. Okay, so this term gives us rho, this term gives us rho squared, and the variance is lambda squared sigma y squared. Okay, and so we found our value for the expectation of A squared in terms of rho and our distribution of y, our second moment of y. So we can plug that into the equation, and we get a value, and we can solve then for n, and we get a value for n, again, depending on the second moment of y. Okay, so we've now actually popped out a value for n. Given that value for n, we can use Little's law to reason about time then, so the average duration of the job in the system. Okay. So, we pull out. And so when we so T, we plug in T equals N over lambda, and we get in terms of sigma y squared. Then if we plug into the waiting time, well, we have to subtract off the time the job, the average time a job spends in actually receiving service. And so we just, again, subtract off 1 over mu. And when we do that, we can collect together this term 1 over mu squared plus sigma y squared. And that is the second moment of the service time distribution. Okay. So the bottom line is that you need to know the mean and the variance of the message processing time. Okay. And so to actually calculate these, well, you just have to plug into equations. And so here we've been given a variance. So that's our and we're given a value for lambda. So we can ask, what's the average waiting time in the queue if the server was idle for a quarter hour? So what information is this the idle server giving us? Well, it gives us, again, the proportion of time that the server was idle, and conversely, the proportion of time that the server is busy. So if the server's idle for a quarter hour, we say it's busy for 3/4, and therefore that's the rho is our value 3/4. Okay. So given rho and lambda, we can calculate a value for either mu or 1 over mu. And then given that, we can plug in to find our value for the variance. Okay. What we need for waiting time, again, was the second moment. So it's the variance plus 1 over mu squared, and so that's 3/2 1 over mu squared plus 2/2 1 over mu squared is 5/2 1 over mu squared, and we get, again, a value. And plugging back in our second moment, we've calculated rho. We were given lambda, we calculated rho, we calculated our second moment for the service distribution, and that gives us, well, a certain value. Okay. And so if we know what our service distribution is, it's again easy then to calculate the variance in the second moment. So if, for instance, we have a Poisson system, then the variance is 1 over mu squared, and the second moment is 2 over mu squared. And so given those values, we can plug those values then in for the waiting times and the total time in the system. We could either go back to our original equations to calculate N, or if we had calculated these, you can use Little's law to find our value for N. And N, in this case, in the case of the MM1Q, turns out to be a relatively straightforward equation. We'll spend a little time in the remainder of the lecture looking at different ways of arriving at this equation, which are specific to MM Qs, where both Poisson, where both arrival and surface disciplines are Poisson. Okay, if we have an MD1Q, so a deterministic Q, a deterministic surface discipline, well, again, we can calculate our variance, which in this case is zero, and our second moment, which is going to be given by 1 over mu squared, where y equals 1 over mu is a constant value. We can, again, plug these into our equations for waiting time and total average waiting time and average time spent in the system, and return to Little's law to find N. And again, we get relatively straightforward equations for that. Okay, so again, that body of results is reasonably general. It assumes that we have our Poisson arrival, and it assumes that we know something about the probabilities of service distribution, but only up to the variance. Okay, so mean and variance would not be sufficient to fully describe your service discipline. You could have any number which would give you the same mean and variance. So our final set of results is going to assume that we have arrival process and service discipline both being Poisson. Okay, and this will give us a more straightforward way of, if that's the case, we have a more straightforward way of handling our Qs. Okay, and what we'll see is that if we make that assumption, we can actually calculate a distribution on N, so we can actually calculate the probability in steady state that you're in any state N. Okay, so that will go beyond just taking the average. Okay, so we've been talking about the number of jobs in the system, and we've been talking about it as an average, but we can regard the number of jobs in the system as being the state of the system, the state of the queue. Okay. And so the state is zero if the system is empty. State one means there's one customer in the system. State N means there are N customers in the system. If we have a single server system, then state one means that you have one customer in server, in service, and nobody waiting. And in general, if you have N customers in the system and a single server, then you have one customer in service and N minus one waiting. So you have an assumption that if there is an available server, then a customer will receive service. Okay. So we can think of this as what's called a Markov process. And the idea here is that at any given time, you have a probability of either entering a state from an adjacent state or exiting the state from an adjacent state. So we're making an assumption that essentially only one thing is happening at any given time, either an arrival or a departure. And if that's the case, then we can calculate what the probability of that arrival or departure is. Okay. And so if we have a period of t, then the probability of an arrival in that period t is given by lambda t. The probability of an departure in a period t is given by mu t. So that means that at any given point, if you're in a state, we'll take state S1, then three things can happen. An arrival can occur, in which case you go from state 1 to state 2 with probability lambda t. A departure can occur. You go from state 1 to state 0 with a probability mu t. And finally, you can stay where you are. And that occurs with assuming that nothing else happens. Okay. And so the only slight change to that pattern would happen in state zero. Obviously, you can't have a departure in state zero. So either you have an arrival, which occurs with probability lambda t, or you don't, which occurs with probability 1 minus lambda t. This is Markov because the probabilities only we've made assumptions so that the probabilities only depend on what state you're in. And these transitions are fully defined from state to state. Okay, so we can look at writing out those equations and we'll see what we get. So the probability of being in state zero is either you're in state zero and you stay there, or you were in state one and you had a departure. And we know what the probabilities of these are. Okay. Now, again, we're assuming that everything is in steady state. So, and these probabilities are not dependent on the actual time in the system, but at any time will hold. Okay. And similarly, if you're in the probability of being in state one, it's probably you were in state zero and an arrival occurred. or you were in state two and a departure occurred, or you stayed in state one. And you can keep going from there. Okay. Now, we're sort of killing two birds with one stone here. We're looking at what happens if the queue is finite. So you stop at state N. Again, if the queue is finite at the end, you can't have any more arrivals. And if the queue is not finite, then you just keep on going. Okay, so if the queue is infinite, then you keep on going. If the queue is finite, well, you cap it off at the end. You can only have a departure. You either have an let me just have a look at that. Okay, and so if you have a finite system with n places, then either you could have come from n minus 1 with an arrival, or stay where you are, so not have a departure. So that's your set of probability equations, and you see that they're all linked to each other. And what we can do is, so our initial one is in terms of P0 and P1, and we can use that to define P1 in terms of P0. And if you solve out this equation, you get that P1 is lambda over mu P0 or rho P0. You can then plug in that value for P1, and you will get an equation for P2, you can plug in the value for P0, and you'll get an equation for P2 in terms of P1, and then from P2 in terms of P1, you can get P2 in terms of P0. Moving along, you can get all your Pn in terms of P0. So it's rho to the n times P0. Okay. And what you see is, so everything's in terms of P0. Our dependency on T falls away. And actually, the dependence on lambda and mu falls away. What matters is the ratio, so lambda over mu, which is rho. Okay. Now, again, we have buried an assumption in here, which is that we can pick T so that a single event is occurring at any given time. But given that, which is a standard assumption to make, then we can solve out for our P, all our probability distribution for our P in terms of P0. And so what this means is that we have defined our entire probability distribution given P0. Now, there's a lot of different ways that we can reach this same point. Another possibility is to use what's called balance equations, and this is just using the properties of stable systems and arguing that if a system is stable, then at any point the movement to the right must equal the movement to the left. Okay. And if this was not the case, then either your system would be trivial and you'd always be in state zero, or again with the idea that service times are related, eventually the service stops if you have no arrivals, and if you're having more flows than if you're having more arrivals than you have departures, then again your system is unstable. Okay, so in that case you end up with balance equations where lambda t pn minus 1 has got to be equal to mu t pn. Okay, and so that will give you the same relations between pn and p0 that we had before, and again we seem to have lost so that should be pn is rho to the n power of n p0. Okay, so we have written all of our probability in terms of P0, and if we had some way to solve for P0, then we'd be happy because we'd have our entire probability distribution then. And it turns out that it's actually relatively straightforward to solve for P0. We just have to observe that the probability of being in any state has to sum to 1. So the sum of the pn's has to be 1. Okay, we just then plug in the pn's in terms of p0, and we get that p0 is 1 over 1 plus rho squared plus, and keep on going. And given that, we can come up with a value for P0. And so we have a few equations. We know the sum of rho to the I for rho less than 1 is 1 over 1 minus rho. So for the infinite case, we can plug that in. And similarly, if you have the finite case, again, I see yet one more typo. That should be n summation rho I equals 0 to n. Then you just take the infinite case and you subtract off the n plus 1 to infinity proportion. Obviously this n plus 1 to infinity, we can pull out rho to the n plus 1, and you're back to from 0 to infinity. Okay, and so anyway, you get a value for that, and I'll again correct that typo before I post the notes. Okay, so we can plug in those values and we'll get p0. So, for our finite case, P0 is 1 minus rho over 1 minus rho to the n plus 1. Given P0, we can calculate any other PI. And the one that's particularly of concern to us is the probability of being in that last state. And this is the probability of blocking. Again, if you remember our pasta property, the probability that an arrival arrives to a full system is the probability of the system being full, the proportion of time the system is full, and that's Pn, so we get rho to the n 1 minus rho over 1 minus rho to the n plus 1. Okay. And again, that's obviously something of concern in finite systems. You want to sort of provision your system sufficiently that the blocking probability is below some acceptable level. Okay, so if we have an infinite queue, we don't need to worry about that. But so again, we can calculate P0, which is 1 minus rho, and Pi, then we can calculate the probability of being in any other state. Okay, so one thing to notice that probably P0... again, is the probability of the system being idle, which it shouldn't be surprising, is 1 minus rho, and we know that rho is the probability that the system is busy. Okay. It's worth noting, again, that rho should be less than 1. If rho is greater than 1, then you do not have a stable system. And again, mathematically, you can see that if rho is greater than 1, these equations aren't going, well, this equation in particular doesn't hold. Okay, so this has given us the full distribution for n. And given the full distribution, we can calculate any statistics from that we would normally calculate from that distribution. And so, in particular, if we want to calculate the average number of jobs in the system, then we are just taking our expectation. And so we're summing I, Pi over I, where either I is 0 to infinity, or potentially I is 0 to n. We can then, once we have n, we proceed as we did before, and use Little's law to find t, and from t we can find waiting times, and from that we can also find nq. So the time in the queue, the average number in the queue versus the average number in the system overall. Okay, so n for the infinite case, the mathematics works out relatively simply. We use a trick of saying that I rho sub I is the derivative of rho sub I with respect to rho times rho, or rho times the derivative of I with respect to I. So again, what's that derivative? That's just rho. That's just I rho to the I minus 1, so add back in the rho. Okay, you can then pull rho out of this sum and pull the derivative out as well. Take our sum of rho to the I, which is 1 over 1 minus rho. Take the derivative of that, multiply it by our rho term, which you saved, and we get, again, a fairly straightforward value. We then plug that value in to our equation, plugging our value for p0, and when we do that, we get rho over 1 minus rho. We can use the same trick for our finite sum. And it works in a similar way. We've already calculated what the finite sum is here. Take the derivative of that, slightly more complicated term. Plug that back in, and again, you get some value for the average number of jobs in the queue. Okay, so a messier term, but relatively straightforward. Okay, so that gives us the basic approach that we will take, assuming we have Poisson arrivals and Poisson service discipline. And what we will do from now on is look at somewhat more complicated cases. So, in these cases, we've assumed that our arrivals and departures were state independent. And now, what we can do, and we will do in the next lecture primarily, we'll sort of get a little preview here, but we'll look at cases where our arrivals and departures are now dependent on the state that we're in, and we'll see that this can arise from a number of scenarios. Okay. So, in our first case, we are going to look at our finite queue and consider our arrivals. And for our finite queue, we can see that we have two types of arrivals, those that enter the system and those that are rejected. So again, this is state dependent. If you arrive and you're in that state N, your arrival is rejected. Okay. So we can relate our arrival rate to the probability of blocking to define what's called a carried arrival rate. So it sort of combines what enters the system, or but it tries to define how many of the arrivals are actually going to enter the system. And obviously, we call this carried arrival rate gamma, and gamma is related to arriving to a not blocked system, so not arriving to state N, and that's 1 minus PB. Okay. We can use this carried arrival rate in our calculations in place of our original lambda. So for Little's law, finite Q, we can use the carried, we should use the carried rate rather than the offered rate. Again, the reason for that is that the rate is really state dependent, so it's different depending on where you are, what state you are in the system. So we have to arrive at a rate that's not state dependent, and so over the entire system, we can use this rate gamma. The efficiency for a finite Q is defined to be the throughput divided by the service rate, so that's gamma over mu, and that's rho times 1 minus PB. Okay, so we're essentially, that's taking into account that we're losing jobs, that they're, again, being turned away. Okay, so that's a very sort of straightforward example of state dependency. Okay, so I guess before we look at others, we're still looking at finite Qs, and besides using Little's law, we can of course directly calculate the waiting times in the system by looking at sort of what state. And so we can look at sort of how many jobs are arriving ahead of, or have arrived ahead of our job. And so if a job arrives to state zero, then there's one job ahead, and the average amount of time through the memory list property, so the average amount of time that it will take to complete that job is 1 over mu. In S1, there are two jobs, the average amount of time is 2 over mu, etc. Again, that is depending on the memory list property of our service times. So again, anytime you fix your observation, then you still have this random amount of time to go. Okay. So the time you're going to spend waiting in the system you know what the amount of time it is for any arriving at any point up until a job arrives to a full system, and obviously they don't wait at all. Okay, and so you need to normalize your calculation of average waiting times based on the probability of not arriving to a full system. Okay, and so that gives you your bottom equation is 1 minus PB or PN. Okay, so we can directly calculate our waiting times, and then use that to turn around and calculate the average number of jobs in the system. Okay, so these are just different ways of doing essentially the same job. Okay. So, in general, for a system, there is no such thing as an infinite buffer, although we can play around with our buffer size. The shorter we make our buffers, the smaller we make our buffers, the smaller our waiting times within the system, but at the cost of not having, of rejecting jobs. The larger you make the buffers, the less jobs you reject, but potentially the longer time the jobs wait in the system. Okay. If your arrival rate is less or is pushing up against your service rate, then essentially what you have to do is to increase your service rate. And you know, one way of doing that is to have more than one server. And if you have more than one server, again, what is going to happen is that the service rate is going to depend on what state you're in. Okay, and so we arrive at a setup like this where we have M servers, and up until all of the servers are busy, the service rate is dependent on how many servers are being used at any given time. So if you're in state one, you can use at most one server, so your rate is mu. If you're in state two, you can use two servers, so your rate is two mu. State three, or state three, three mu. Up to state m, all of your servers are being used, and the rate of departure is m mu. If you go beyond that, well, now you have jobs waiting, but you have no more servers, so your service rate remains the same. Okay. This is a state-dependent queue, but the approach to solving this is essentially going to be the same. We can think of, again, flow in one direction has to equal flow in the opposite direction, and use those balance equations to define our probability of being in any given state in terms of P0, sum up the probabilities to equal 1, solve for P0. So we can use the same approach as before. Okay. Another example of state-dependent queues are state-dependent arrivals, and this is essentially what you're looking at in your assignment with the red policy. So depending on the state of the queue, your arrival rates can change, or possibly customers, which might possibly reflect customers being rejected or going away, even if there is still space in the system. So again, the approach to solving this sort of a queue is going to be the same as for our simpler case. Just now, our lambdas, our arrival rates are changing depending on the state of the system. Okay, so that's it for our queuing part one. Again, what we've seen is so a number of results that are independent of service disciplines, and then we've looked at why mathematically Poisson arrival and service disciplines are allow us to arrive at interesting results, and at least in terms of the arrivals, why it's a plausible assumption. It's possibly less plausible for the service disciplines, but again, it allows us to get nice results. And next time, I'm sorry, if you do the follow-on course to this one, you will look at in more detail at the assumption, this assumption of Poisson service disciplines. I'm just, you know, again, presenting some results, but you can look more deeply at when they're significant or not in the follow-on module to this one. Okay, so next lecture, we will continue on the theme of queuing and looking at some of these state-dependent queuing results.